Welcome to Dear Jane. I am Scott Baker, and she is Marcy Little. Marcy, how are you?
Good.
All right. From the very beginning, we need to do this because we always forget. It's about the algorithm, right? It's about, we have to somehow
beat it, outsmart it.
Outsmart the algorithm, and we got to promote pro-life content. So the way to do that, my understanding, is you hit the like button and you share, and what else do you do? I mean, all those things.
You ring the notification bell on YouTube so you never miss an episode. All of those things. Make sure you're following us on social media so you never miss an episode.
Yeah. All those things help because, you know, then they sort of bubble to the top, and that's kind of how all of that works.
Be sure to invite Scott to your next marketing workshop. He can tell you how it all works.
Yeah, that's my technical explanation, is it just sort of bubbles to the top.
Bubbles.
I'll do all those things. And so you would really help us out, and you'll help out pro-life content.
I like bubbles. I've never quite heard that analogy before, but
I'm
going to let that
simmer
a little bit.
So we're going to learn some good stuff today. We're going to talk. It's kind of cool because this is sort of counterintuitive, maybe. So there's a group that has put together what they call the Blueprint for Life. And it is sort of some policy positions to help out, just to maybe make abortion unnecessary. I don't know if that would be right or not, but basically a lot of the times you'll hear mothers to be talk about the financial concerns that they have, and that's really what influences their decision for life or not. And so this group has put together this Blueprint for Life. It talks about, you know, helping out with child tax credits and helping out with some healthcare financing or funding and all of these sorts of things. A lot of things that would traditionally you might would associate with progressive policymakers. But what's interesting is some of the people guiding this are conservatives. I think like Rick Santorum, I want to say, was one, and Mike Huckabee some others. So it's kind of interesting. So looking forward to having that conversation today. But first, let's make sure we mention our fantastic sponsors, Choose Life Marketing.
Yeah. Speaking of marketing, I'm really going to pitch that bubbling idea to them. But whether you want your algorithm results to bubble or maybe you have different goals for your marketing, if you are a pro-life organization, you really should talk with our friends at Choose Life Marketing. They are excellent at telling your story to the right people. So maybe you are working on fundraising and you need to get your donors more involved in your mission, or maybe part of your mission is reaching abortion-minded women. Our friends at Choose Life Marketing can help. They have strategists and specialists who cover all areas of marketing. They'll put together the right plan and strategy for you and your organization so you see the results that you want to see and ultimately more lives are saved. So definitely check them out, ChooseLifeMarketing.com, to get started today.
Jesse Sutherland is the Federal Policy Director for Americans United for Life, and they are the group putting the charge together for this Blueprint for Life, and Jesse's our guest today on Dear Jane. All right, Jesse, let's talk about the Blueprint for Life. Sort of give us a rundown of what it is exactly and why it got started. What was the impetus?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So we're a coalition of probably close to two dozen organizations now, pro-life organizations, national and state level. We came together probably about a year and a half ago, and we seem to be in a vacuum of leadership in the movement. And how do we move on past Roe? How do we move on past Dobbs? And so we felt like the movement really needed some bold leadership. And we also needed to address some of the things that the pro-choice side calls out. Why do women have to take a pay cut when they get pregnant? How are we promoting the flourishing of families? How are we actually trying to reform the foster care system, the adoption system? How do we actually be pro-women and not just pro-life? Through a bunch of conversations and lots of good debates, we came up with this, 7 pillars of what we think is the next step of the pro-life movement. One of the pillars is focused on how do we actually address women's health, right? Maternal health. You think about paid family leave. You think about our initiative to make birth free, right? How do we actually help mothers who might be in tough situations, but also how do we actually help the flourishing of families and their children? And so child tax credits, one idea, paid family leave, engaging in those conversations, that's kind of what this is about.
Some of the things that you have as pillars have sort of been maybe pushed in the past by progressive leaders or people maybe who aren't even pro-life. Has that been a hurdle so far? Do you anticipate it being a hurdle moving forward if you're advocating for policy change from a party that maybe isn't used to advocating for some of these things?
Yeah, no, I think, it's a challenge. I think you know, as pro-lifers, I think in the place we're going, the season we're about to step into, I really think it's important as pro-lifers to be apolitical, to be bipartisan, to really kind of step out of the single party mindset we've been in for generations. And I think we need to start actually building tables instead of just being in our echo chambers. Round tables are where things get done. Echo chambers are where we just talk about it and we spin our wheels. I think a lot of these organizations, they're prophetic voices to both parties, right? We want to call out both parties of where we're seeing human dignity swept under the rug. We really want to challenge conservatives, right? Fiscal conservatives, like put your money where your mouth is. We put our money where we value the most. And we also want to challenge Democrats who think abortion is the answer to everything. There's a lot of challenge that we can have for both sides. And as pro-lifers, we stand in the middle, right? This is not a Republican movement. It's not a Democratic movement. It's a movement of justice. And that's where kind of this whole mindset of Blueprint for Life coalition comes from.
Yeah. And to Marcy's point, and you kind of referenced this, Jesse, is, you know, some of the pillars of the Blueprint calls for more fiscal spending, for example. And, you know, and some hardcore conservatives may bristle at that. They might think, they'll say we're pro-life to the core. But then when you present them with, okay, here's an investment that you need to make, it might cause a little of dissonance for them. But it's about helping them see the bigger picture, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the reality is Congress, I've been up here for 7 years working adjacent and even in Congress. And we spend money like drunken men, no doubt. And that needs to change. That is a huge issue. But we also need to create a culture and a systematic pro-life safety net, if you'd like to say it like that, that supports moms, that supports families. And so creating a pro-life culture, right? We're not there yet, right? We're not there. We're not at the place of making abortion unthinkable yet. We're not at the place of making it imaginable or unnecessary. It's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of energy, a lot of effort, a lot of resources. And it's going to take a lot of policies to get there. And I think every penny that we do spend is going to be worth it in the end, right? I mean, just think about Make Birth Free initiative, for example. We already fund abortion federally. We already fund sterilization. We already fund abortifacients. When a woman goes to have pregnant or to give birth, she's facing an average of $19,000 bill before she brings her baby home. You know, this is an issue. This is a huge issue, and we need to have a system set up that actually supports the flourishing of women, their child, and their family. So I think it's going to be worth it in the end. I think you're right, Scott and Marcy. Like, this is about educating. This is about helping policymakers, stakeholders see the bigger picture. The reality is we might not see the investment return on investment until 18 years down the line, right? But guess what? It's going to be worth it. And if we can see, if we can look for the future and see the legacy of this, you know, I think it's going to be, the country's going to be better off.
Mm-hmm. Do you get the sense that, I don't know, different legislators, people that you talk to want to see the bigger picture? I'm thinking in particular of my state legislature. I live in Colorado, and I'm thinking about the different bills that have been debated the last few years. One in particular, they were debating forcing insurance companies to include coverage for abortion in their plans. And one of the amendments that the other side brought forward was, okay, well, let's also force them to cover other things in their insurance plans that are more supportive to women who want to choose life and keep life, and it was just shot down. So I wonder about maybe the answer is states like Colorado are a lost cause, but I wonder about breaking through those types of ideological barriers where the other side maybe is so entrenched in their obsession with abortion that they don't truly want to invest in this type of legislation. How do we move forward bipartisanly, if that's a word, in states like Colorado?
Yeah. So I didn't think I was going to do this, but I'll share with you something that I think about a lot. I actually, in 2019, I had a 18 or 19, I had a dream that I was racing Beto O'Rourke in a kayak. And I had already beat him twice. And I knew I'd already beat him. And I said to him, I'm really big on racial reconciliation. So I said to him, I said, Beto, thank you for talking about racial reconciliation in your campaign. And he said, okay, thank you. And then I said to him, like as serious as I could be, I said, and I would be for your universal health care if it banned all abortions. And then I woke up and I was like in a cold sweat. And I was like, what is that? I don't think I would be for any universal health care. But I think what I was encouraged out of that dream was that we need to be able to compromise on policy, on preference, on practice every day, but never on principle. And I think both sides, we need to get to the table. That's the only way forward, right? America's built on compromises, right? So we can compromise on a lot of things that nowadays people think we can't, on the fringes of the far right or the far left. But the reality is, like, you know, we can have a lot, there's a lot of ground that we can find that's common. And I think the more we, you know, it's a more heated environment up here on the federal side of things than it is in the states. Obviously, there's states like Colorado, California, and other states that are, I don't foresee them being lost colleges. I understand what you're saying. There's a lot of, there's a lack of hope in some ways, for sure. But I think that policymakers have a thousand issues that they're facing, and I think that education is huge, and also just like I said, building relationships across the aisles where you can actually go into a Democrat's office at the state level, and to have conversations, and to see where there's common ground, and then fight with that person for that common ground. And you know, like, I have lots of progressive and Democratic friends up here in DC, and through conversations, not just because of me, but just in general, I would say that most of them are practicing pro-life, but they would never vote for a Republican. And I think we need to get to a place as a pro-life movement, where we can actually, yeah, you might have to cut this out because I feel like I'm a little wordy, actually. But I lost my train of thought. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it does. It does make sense. And I'm just, you know, I'm still thinking about your dream with Beto. Marcy has dreams about Bernie Sanders, but that's a whole different conversation for different episode. Let's talk about some of the tangible parts of the blueprint, because really what this gets, and we hear this a lot from mothers-to-be a big factor in their decision making is financial, right? I mean, can I afford it? How's it going to impact my job? All of these things. One of the things I notice, we talk about childcare, we talk about healthcare, things of that. But we also, it seems like there's a mention a couple times of like a tax credit and that sort of thing. Is that something that would really help? Isn't the key there that the refundability part of it, making, you know, trying to get cash in their pocket so they can, you know, they can have it while they're making this decision? I mean, sort of walk us through how that might tangibly help some of these mothers.
Yeah, I think CTC does help child tax credit. You know, I think it's become more of this populist sort of policy. You know, we have a, I think Patrick Brown said recently, it's a CTC arms race. You know, you have Vance saying 5,000 and Kamala saying 6,000. And, you know, maybe tomorrow we'll see 15,000 or tonight at the debate. Yeah, I mean, I think getting money in parents' hands and trusting them to do the best thing and to provide for their family, I think that's really about the flourishing of families, right? I think a tax credit is one of the best ways we can go about of supporting moms and supporting families and supporting early age children, and I think it would, you know, minimize the financial burden that parents, you know, face as soon as they have you know, a baby. And so, you know, we saw it this past last few months, that actually since January, we had a CTC bill that passed the House by 357 votes, went to the Senate and just kind of hung there, and it pretty much died after Schumer made a showboat of it. And there's just disagreements about how to do that. But I think in general, it's a bipartisan idea that's been around. And I think it does need to be expanded because it really is about, I mean, CTC is really about putting cash in the hands of families that need it. They just had a baby. Let's help them. Let's give them a leg up. Yeah.
What role in all of this do faith-based and nonprofit organizations, what role do they play in the solution to the mess we find ourselves in?
I mean, it's a huge role. That's actually one of our pillars. I mean, it's faith-based and PRCs and nonprofits are really what they're the engine for the pro-life movement. And so any way we can help them do what they do best is great. That means getting the government off their back. That means getting financial resources in their hands, supporting them. So I think they play a huge role in this. I think they also play a huge role of like they're the ones in the grassroots level, right? They're the ones who can share the stories, right? You think about all the women who come into PRCs or pregnancy resources centers each and every day. It's not us in the ivory towers here in Washington that have our feet, you know, dirty and our knees dirty because we've been on the ground. It's those who are in the clinics or at the pregnancy resource centers that actually are facing these women on a daily basis and helping them. Mm-hmm. So I think they are crucial. They're critical to this mission in the next steps of the pro-life movement. They've been crucial and critical, and they're going to remain that way. And we need to protect them, right, through law. I mean, it's really sad to see Democratic administrations at the federal level and also the state level that are going after them. That should never be the case. Like, what are we doing? You know, like, these are the people that are actually helping people, and we're trying to attack them. So hopefully we'll have some changing from that, but it's going to be an uphill battle. Hopefully we can just make the case that these are the people actually helping. And I think that's all we can do.
One of the pillars, and I like this a lot, and surely there would be, well, I would say universal agreement, but I don't know that we have universal agreement on anything. But streamlining the adoption process. I mean, yes, the financial side. Yes, making it more affordable. But we hear stories all the time about just how cumbersome it is if for couples who are interested in adoption. That is a major, major undertaking. And a lot of couples are scared off, or they just, you know, they wear out. Boy, that just seems to me like that a lot of people could get on board with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it seems like that should be a bipartisan thing. And I think in many cases it is. I think that that's kind of what we try to lean into with the blueprint on this area specifically. Adoption, foster care. Obviously, foster care system needs a lot of reform. I just think the world of friends and family who have adopted. Like it's radical hospitality. It is literally the lifeblood of the movement. Should we help them in every part of the way we can? Absolutely. Should we streamline the process? Absolutely. And I think there's actually tangible proposals out there that we can actually move this forward in a bipartisan way. I think state level and national level.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Is that more of a state solution, or is there something that can be done on the federal level?
I think both. Obviously, we're engaging in the conversation around like credits and stuff at the federal level, tax credits for foster care and adoption. But obviously, you know, there's 51, experiments in democracy in the United States. Right. And so I love seeing the innovative ideas at the state level too. And I think that's what really informs federal policymakers when they start seeing, good policy on the state level. So both.
Marcy's talking about the District of Columbia. I could see you there with your...
Oh, yeah, 52 maybe.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks. I want to go back to something you said earlier that I'm still thinking about. In just having conversations and building bridges, bringing people to the table, having conversations with policymakers... how can we make our case when we're going up against, so we're speaking in one of their ears, and then in the other ear they have the big abortion lobby with its millions and billions of dollars. How do we go up against that? Because I understand what you're saying, and that is like a more appealing path forward to me of like, I just want to sit down and talk with people and show them the blueprint and paint this picture of the path forward. But then I know the underbelly of the beast is all of the lobbyists and the big lobby firms and their millions and billions of dollars. How do we go up against that?
Yeah. You're talking about one-on-one conversations, or more in general.
I'm just talking about conversations with policymakers to get them on board with this. Mm-hmm. It seems like we're facing an uphill battle when they've got their campaign funders and the lobby groups pressuring them on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're trying to learn what that looks like. It's not a one size fits all. I think it really comes down to being okay with just building relationships. I think it takes a lot of humility, right? Like we don't have all the big finances, but what we do have, we can only give what we have, right? And so if that means building relationships, that's usually what it looks like. It's not going to be a quick fix, right? I mean, this is something that has taken 50 years. I like to say we've been in an abusive relationship with abortion for 50 years in our country, and we don't know how to get out of it. And so it's going to take some time of building relationships with these lawmakers, with their staff, getting to a place of safety and trust within that relationship. hopefully moving forward, you know, I think, obviously, you know, the reality is, like, with Democrats on the Hill, there's not many Democrats that want to talk to pro-life organizations. That's just the reality of it. And so sometimes you have to continue to ask, and you have to continue to ask, you have to continue to send emails. And then finally you get a meeting there, you build a relationship, and you can try to continue that on. Yeah, like, I mean, I think I'm a man of faith, right? I want to be a man of prayer. And so, like, the only way through this is love, right? The only way through this is empathy. The only way through this is actually trying to get into their shoes of why they believe the way they do. And so, like I was saying earlier, my progressive friends and Democratic friends, many of them see things the way we do. They just would never vote for a Republican. And so I think that it's really about relationship building, right? It's also about having conversations at the gas station or the grocery store line. You know, like, hey, go sign up for a campaign and do some house walks, you know, house knocking, have conversations with that, woman down the street and never waves at you, you know, like, we have to be intentional. And I think the pro-life movement is full of intentional people and full of people of love. And so it's not this big, you know, show we can put on and change all hearts and minds within, you know, 2 years. It's going to be slow and steady, right? That wins the race. And I think about MLK's quote a lot, right? The arc of the moral universe bends towards justice, right? And so we can have hope that one day things will be made right, as they have been in the past. So that's kind of where I come from.
You know, one of the criticisms I would have of the pro-life movement is we always have big ideas. Everybody's got the latest, greatest ideas. The follow-through isn't always the best. So in the minute or so we've got left here, what are the tangible next steps here for the Blueprint for Life?
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Scott. I agree with that. I've seen it far too often. And so for us, in this coalition, I think that we want to continue to push and to build momentum around each one of these pillars, whether it be supporting moms, whether it be adoption, whether it be meeting healthcare needs. You know, these are just, you know, it's going to take some work, right? It's going to take a lot of time. And so building momentum actually looks like what I was just talking about, the relationships, right? It actually looks like rolling up our sleeves and getting in the metro and going to chat with staffers on the Hill until you can get face to face with a senator. On both sides, or a congressman on both sides, or congresswoman. And at the state level, it looks like doing the same thing, knocking on doors of your state legislatures, the Senate and the General Assemblies, and building relationships with their staff. And then maybe one day you'll actually have a great conversation that changes a heart and a mind. So that's kind of where I think the next steps are for the Blueprint for Life Coalition.
If you want to learn more, you can check out the website blueprintforlifecoalition.com. They've got some great resources. You can look in to see what some of the plan is and maybe how you can help with the conversations that Jesse is talking about. Jesse, appreciate you joining us here today on Dear Jane.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again for listening to Dear Jane.
You can follow along every day on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and X. And make sure you also are subscribed so you never miss an episode on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, as well as YouTube. Ring that bell so you're notified and you never miss an episode.